Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with Boston-based bassist and founder of the band Club D'Elf, Mike Rivard. We talked to him about their latest 2022 CD, You Never Know. It is their third studio full-length album with the sound of musicians in full improvisational flight. Mike is the head of the band and sole constant member of the group's 24-year run. And back in 2015, while tracking spiritual insight in the deep Amazon, he experienced a terrifying pulmonary embolism that changed his life forever. He reflects on this, the band, new music, his life, and the future. Enjoy.
Hey, Mike, what's up, man?
Not too much. Just sitting here doing some shedding.
Cool, man. Well, thanks for taking a minute out for the show. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate your having me on. Thank you very much.
I guess as we get into talking about your latest 2022 CD, You Never Know, it's set against the backdrop of a very strange time we've been living through since March of 2020 with COVID and, you know, the start-stop world of live shows. What does this release mean?
Well, I mean, for me, it's... There's a personal story behind it. Music has its origins in some personal trauma that I went through. For years, I was going to the Amazon jungle for some spiritual work, and my last trip there in 2015, while I was in isolation in the jungle, I didn't know this at the time, but it turned out that I had developed a pulmonary embolism, which is a, you know, pretty serious thing to have. That experience kind of propelled me into a pretty dark time. Writing and recording the music for this record was, you know, was a big part of my my healing journey and my therapy. So I've spent most of the time during the pandemic, you know, just finishing the album, working on it, and for me, it's, you know, it's kind of a completion of a journey that's, you know, that's been going on for about 6 years now, and a celebration of the community that that the band has created over the course of 24 years. You know, it's a collective. There's been over 100 musicians who have come in and out of the band, and just being, you know, part of this community and playing the music with my friends has been a huge thing for me, you know, for coming through this whole experience and now finally sharing it, you know, sharing the music with an audience. So it feels pretty good to, you know, finally get it out there.
So going through this experience was obviously before COVID happened. Did it give you a much different perspective on going into a pandemic and something as tumultuous as what we've been going through?
I wouldn't say it's been an easy experience, but compared to what I went through, you know, with my health, I was very seriously depressed for a long time. Going through that experience has, I guess, you know, kind of deepened me and deepened my resolve. And through the pandemic, I've been trying to make myself more available to people around me that I feel have been going through a harder time than I had, you know, because for me it was kind of like I had already been through the darkest part, and now, you know, I wouldn't say it was an easy ride by any stretch of the imagination, but, you know, compared to what I went through before, it wasn't on the same level.
So what do you hope the listener gets from this album? What's your hope for them now that, you know, they have the chance to listen to it? What do you want them to get?
Thing that's always been a big thing for me with the music that the band does is, you know, the healing aspect of it. One of the big influences for the band is Ganawa music from North Africa, from Morocco. That for me was hugely important, you know, as far as healing myself, you know, getting through my own personal darkness. And I guess, you know, I would hope that people can, you know, find that in the music and find a place of, you know, healing through, you know, trance music has been a huge influence for us. And that's one of the major aspects of Ganawa music. It's all about trance. It's, you know, like healing trance music. You know, I would hope that people could kind of come away with a sense of going into the dark and coming out with, you know, with something light, coming out with some sense of hope and healing from the journey.
So talk to me about the band. How did the band come together? How has it evolved up until today?
I was involved, do you know Mark Sandman, the band Morphine? Ever heard of
yeah.
him? So I was playing in a band called Hypnosonics, a band of Mark's, throughout the late 80s and through the 90s. Mark was really a huge influence in terms of starting the band. a lot of that was due to, I think he just got tired of me, hounding him to book gigs for Hypnosonics, because he was mostly involved with Morphine at that point. So he encouraged me to start the band, and I was playing in a bunch of different bands in Boston. I did had a pretty busy freelance career, and I decided to I was listening to a lot of Bill Laswell's projects at the time. This was like around 97, and the Crooklyn dub stuff that was happening in New York and all the Laswell stuff. And I just decided to try to put something together that was there's a club in Cambridge called the Lizard Lounge that's actually been closed for the last couple of years through the pandemic. But my friend Billy Beard was booking the club. I just pitched him the idea of doing a regular night of improvised music with, kind of a house rhythm section. And then I would have different people come in and remix the music, and it was a way to kind of form a band that incorporated all of my favorite musicians who, would never be able to commit to a band full time, but it was, the structure was loose enough that people could just come in and, sit in and play. And the music was composed from the ground up, from the groove. So, I called upon people like John Badeski and Sandman, and, kind of took off, and there wasn't really anything like it happening in Boston. So it just kind of went from there.
What is it that you, how do you all come together? I mean, it's obviously, it's a communicative, music is a communication vehicle, and it has to work. Why does it work so well for you guys?
I think it all comes down to the groove, I mean, the strongest relationship in the band is the rhythm section. I've always been, inspired by the great rhythm sections. Like, one of the touchstones for the band was the sort of stuff that Charles Mingus and Danny Richmond would do, where, they would just create different rhythm universes behind the soloists. My main focus has always been to work with the drummer. Originally it was Eric Kerr, and then for the last 15-16 years it's been Dean Johnson. We spend a lot of time working out very specific grooves. There's a Moroccan rhythm called the Shabby that we've spent a lot of time working with. I've had the good fortune to work a lot with a great Moroccan musician named Brahim Frivgan, who's been a huge influence in terms of bringing the Moroccan elements into the band. So we would spend a lot of time just working on these rhythmic concepts with the idea that the groove would be very strong and very, very supple, and people could come in and put whatever on top of it, and just kind of remix it. And I think the focus has always been to try to make people, the guests who play with the band, feel as comfortable as possible. So it almost feels like it's their rhythm section, so they can do their shit. The groove is really, I think, the strongest touchstone. And the idea is for everybody to, approach it from the groove first and really create, a commonality in the groove, and then everything else comes on top of that.
So talk to me a little bit about Boston. How's Boston doing these days, and how does that environment support the band? And hopefully when everything opens up, what's your plan as we move forward?
Well, I mean, like I said, the Lizard Lounge has been closed, and that's been our home base for 24 years. We've had a residency at the Lizard on two Fridays a month since 1998. So that hasn't been around, and that's been tough. But we've been playing other venues. There's a venue that's opened up south of Boston called Soundcheck Studios, where we're having a CD release party. Actually, it's an album release party. We're actually doing this new one on vinyl. But you know, the scene is taking a hit. There's been a number of closings, and things kind of opened up for a bit in the spring and the summer, and then it's gotten a little more dicey. So it really, it's a tough time. You know, I mean, there's no getting around it, but the community in Boston is very strong. Everybody, you know, supports each other, and the musician community especially is really strong. And I feel really, really fortunate to play with, you know, some great musicians. Like on the album, besides Medeski there and Brahim, the band is consisted of a lot of the musicians that I played for years in the Boston community. Duke Levine is on guitar, Kevin Berry's on guitar, Paul Schulteis on keyboards, a great Indian tabla player, Amit Kavtikar, guests on it. And, you know, we've just been trying to pull together and support each other to get through it.
How did this music journey begin for you? What were some bands that you really got into early on that kind of led you to finding your voice?
Well, you know, for me, the first music that I really got into was kind of psychedelic rock and British blues rock. I was into The Dead and Led Zeppelin, Black Sabbath. And then when I was in junior high school, I had a teacher who turned me on to Bitches Brew. And that sort of got me interested in music that was, you know, beyond what I was listening to. And I started searching out. So I grew up in Minnesota. You know, at the time that I was becoming of age musically, you know, this was pre-internet, and I was going down to the cities to use record stores and finding, you know, records by Sun Ra and Art Ensemble Chicago, searching out, you know, all the musicians that had played on the records that I was listening to, like, you know, through Bitches Brew. I started getting into Dave Holland and Chick Corea and Herbie Hancock. And, you know, it's just kind of one connection leads to another. So I heard Frank Zappa, and I started, you know, searching for every Zappa record I could find, and got into King Crimson. So what we've tried to do on this record, I think, is pay tribute to a lot of the music that was really influential and inspirational for us. Like we cover Frank Zappa song, and we do a Miles, Joe Zawinul medley, and there's a Moroccan band that Brahim turned me on to called Nasli Wan. They're sort of known as the Moroccan Beatles, and we pay tribute to them. When I was in Morocco in 2009, I had an opportunity to travel with an entourage from Somerville, Massachusetts. Somerville, where I was living at the time, has a sister city partnership with a small town in Morocco called Tisnit. And I went with a delegation to inaugurate the sister city partnership. And while I was there, I got to meet and hang out with Mahmoud Ginia, who's one of the great Ghanaian musicians. And while I was with him, he taught me a song, and we do our rendition of the song on the album. So, you know, all this music is kind of, you know, we take all the influences that we have, and we try to create, you know, kind of a unified sound, with combining, you know, influences like Terence McKenna with the Moroccan music. And, you know, it's that's what we do as musicians, you know, take all these influences and just try to create something original with it, I think.
What do you like the best about being a professional musician? What do you look forward to the most each day that you get to create this music?
Oh, it's definitely the personal connections with the players. You know, I mean, with this music, a lot of it is, you know, I write the songs. We do some, you know, tunes. We recently did a show with Modesky and Dave Tronzo, and, you know, as part of that, we kind of draw upon songs that that are all part of our, you know, our shared language. You know, we did a Duke Ellington tune, a Stevie Wonder song. But for the most part, we're just making shit up. You know, we're tapping into the moment and the relationships that we've built up over the years and how each person is feeling that day and that moment. And calling upon the spirits, you know, we're just trying to tap into the unseen world and create something beautiful out of it, you know, that we can share with the audience, tapping into the energy of everybody that's in the room at the same time. So it doesn't always work, you know, but when it does, it's some very sublime moments. And I think that's what we chase after, is that kind of music of dreams that harkens back to that place that we all were before we were born and after we die, you know, that kind of sense of the eternal realm.
So my final question to you is this: everyone has a perception of you, your family, your friends, your fans, but ultimately you live your life. You have a perception of you. Who do you think you are?
Who do I think I am? That's a question I've been asking myself a lot, especially through the pandemic. You know, what is eternal? What remains? I think I'm someone that you know, really tries to bring forces together in a way that creates something, you know, something powerful and beautiful through music. You know, I think one of my strong points has been as a person who, you know, kind of brings people together. And I, you know, I'm a bass player. I'm not really concerned about showcasing myself. I've always been attracted to the aspect of the bass as a support, as a foundation. And I just really love supporting and bringing about relationships that create, you know, create this powerful sense of creation, you know, and just stepping back and allowing the moment to happen. I think, you know, bassists make good band leaders because we, you know, we think about the whole picture. We think about the creating space for all the other instruments and the other sounds to come together. And I think if any talent that I have, it's in, you know, creating an environment or a template for whatever to happen, you know, for people to feel free to express themselves in the highest level that they can. I mean, that's my goal at any rate.
That's a great answer. Great way to wrap everything up. Mike, thanks for taking a minute out for Neon Jazz. Good luck with the album and the return to stage as we move forward this year.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for the opportunity and, you know, hope to see you out there somewhere.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to another Neon Jazz interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the finest players in Boston, Kansas City, and spots all over the world giving fans all that jazz. Thanks to Mike for his time, music, and story. If you want to hear more interviews, go to Famous Interviews with Joe Domino in the iTunes Store. Visit NeonJazz at YouTube.com. And for everything Neon Jazz all the time, go to the NeonJazz.blogspot.com. Until next time, enjoy the jazz, my friends.
Neon Jazz.